Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. Here at Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
And today we are going to be interviewing a guest, Nancy Davis Coe. Bridget, why don't you tell them, well, you know what, before we get started with Nancy's intro, let's just talk. Nancy's topic was all about her The Thank You Project, which is a bunch of letters she wrote thanking family members and friends, places and things that she was grateful for.
Yes.
And what a great idea. And I know you really liked it too. Why don't you talk a little about your gratitude journey with this?
Well, it really made me think about a lot of different things. And so she talked about, first of all, it was her 50th birthday, and you'll hear about that. And she decided to write the 50 letters to people and places, and that really she was thankful for something that they did for them. But things that I'm grateful for, of course, in which she mentions in her book, definitely very thankful for friends and family.
Right.
But I'm also very thankful for my health. I mean, so many people, things hit them just out of the blue. People that have to fight cancer or a serious illness, that just hits them out of the blue. And so I am very thankful for my health. I'm thankful that I have a place to live. And there's other things I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for my children being here. I'm thankful that I can go out and take a walk, and I have nice friends like Colleen, or people I can commiserate with.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for how I was brought up. I don't think anybody's childhood is perfect, but I'm very thankful that I have so many siblings and I have so many people who love me that have to love me because they are siblings.
They don't have a choice.
Yeah. I am very thankful that I have a lot of people that care about me and that I get to care about. So what are you thankful for?
Ditto, I guess, for all of that. Some of the things that really resonated for me in the book was the letter she wrote to her dad, and he died what, 6 weeks later or three months later? I'm sorry. Because what a great gift to have, knowing if I equate it to my father was a very long, drawn out death. He was in hospice for a while. And I must have said goodbye and everything I wanted to say at least 10 times. And that was really hard. But for her to be able to put everything in writing at a time where he wasn't dying, he was perfectly healthy. So she was just doing it to show him how much she appreciated him. What a beautiful gift to both of them. So that
And
was
then he loved it so much. You know,
right, he framed it.
Oh my
God. So that was beautiful. And then she wrote a note to her mom, and her mom now has dementia. So her mom knew beforehand, stuff like that. So I think that's very meaningful. I like that she puts that you should thank family first, and then your friends, and then places and things like that. Because I do think without family, none of this really matters. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk so much on this show about reframing our attitude on midlife and being grateful for having all these new years and new experiences. So she kind of connects with that. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful that we are doing this and that we are thinking of all these wonderful things that we can be grateful for in midlife, as opposed to things that we no longer have in our lives. And stuff like that. So it definitely made you stop and think. And like she said, with the science, once you start thinking that, your brain kind of like sets up to be happier.
Yeah.
And there is a scientific connection between being grateful and appreciation and gratitude turning into happiness. So
yes, no,
I'm all for the happiness stuff.
I am too. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Nancy Davis Coe. She is a freelance writer whose work has appeared in the Washington Post, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Rumpus, and the Toast. And she's been recognized as Voice of the Year in the humor category by Blog Her, and was the inaugural champion of Oakland's Literary Deathmatch. And she covers the years between being hip and breaking one. I love that. She has midlifemixtape.com is her website. She also has a podcast, Midlife Mixtape Podcast, and it's available on all major podcast platforms. Her book, The Thank You Project, Cultivating Happiness, One Letter of Gratitude at a Time, was published by Running Press in December of 2019. And you can also reach her at www.davisco.com, and that's DavisKho.com.
Well, thank you for that information. We're going to let Nancy take over now, so enjoy the interview. Welcome, everyone. We have Nancy Davis Coe here with us today, and she is the author of The Thank You Project, Cultivating Happiness. And I think we could all use a little bit more happiness right now in our world. We are taping this around the time of coronavirus, but we are going to try to just talk about gratitude and happiness and refocus our intent on that. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, we are very happy to have you. You know, in reading your book, there was a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say aha moments, because I think it's in everybody's brain to be grateful for what they have, but I should take a moment and actually write that down, mm-hmm. or take a moment and actually appreciate that person. So we'll get into that. You also have a podcast that's very similar to ours called the Midlife Mixtape, which just makes me laugh at the very thought of, because... Mm-hmm. who hasn't had a good mixtape given to them by an employee?
Well, I figured if the artifact of a mixtape didn't speak to a potential listener and make sense to that Gen X person in midlife, then the tagline of for people in the years between being hip and breaking one might work. Because if you didn't laugh at the tagline, you're not going to find the podcast very entertaining.
That's true.
Self-selective.
Yes. And it's very funny. I recommend anyone listening to it. The last episode I just listened to was about the trouble you got into as a kid, the little shenanigans you would do. Yeah.
Right. I do these listener contributed episodes once in a while where I just ask listeners to answer a question and I get the funniest stories. And given, I love the fact that this is going to air 6 to 8 weeks from now, because it makes me think, we're going to be in a much better time. I keep trying to look forward and pick that date on the calendar where even if things are still a little bit dark, they're probably not going to be as dark as they feel right now. So mm-hmm. in light of where we were when I was taping that episode, I was thinking I've got to come up with something that will just be a funny distraction for people for that. So that one was,
and it was great.
Tell me the story that people tell about you when you go to a high school reunion. Like, do you remember how that one?
Just,
and I got some good ones.
That's a good question, but
I loved it. Yes. I just
loved it. Oh, come on, Colleen. I know you've got a good story for that.
I think everyone has a good story for that.
I still haven't heard her one good story, though. I didn't.
Which one?
The reason why you went to prom with the guy you're married to now.
I still haven't
heard the details.
It has something, my original prom date might have gotten arrested for some credit card fraud.
That was it. Sure. Never told me why.
So remember those used to have the credit card runners?
Right.
He got a copy of someone's credit card runner and ordered stereo equipment along with like five or six other guys, allegedly. And then I should have known I was going to be a lawyer at that point, because I went in and argued with the principal about why I should still be allowed to bring him as a date, because I could have gone to like the prison system and gotten somebody on a day pass and you would have never known, and I could have brought them. Like, that was my argument when I was 17 as to why I should bring him, even though he was expelled, I should still bring him.
There was only one field for you, truly.
It didn't work and I ended up
She lost
the case, but won my husband. So
yes. There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but getting back to you.
I don't know. I could talk about your prom date for longer.
We'll go on your show and talk all about it. We'll answer any questions that you want. But anyway, so you have this book called The Thank You Project, and it really, the premise is that you were turning 50 a few years ago and you mm-hmm. wanted to write down thank yous. Can you tell us about that process and what made you do it?
Yeah, so I was coming around the bend into the year I was going to turn 50, which was 2016, and I was feeling very reflective because I felt like I've been married to my husband at that point, I think, for 24 years. We had two daughters who were doing real well. My parents were around, and I just had seen enough in my life that I knew that I was fortunate, and I didn't want to take any of that for granted. So I decided what I would do to commemorate the 50th birthday milestone was write one thank you letter every week to someone who had helped or shaped or inspired me. That was my rule. And so I sat down in late December 2015 and just whipped up a list of like 20 people, 25 people that I thought I would probably want to write to, and wrote the first couple of letters to my parents, in fact. And I really went into this thinking, oh, it's just kind of a fun, upbeat way to celebrate this year. Well, the year turned dark really quickly and unexpectedly. My dad was diagnosed with cancer and died 6 weeks later. None of us knew he was sick. My mom has dementia and dad was her caregiver. And so all of a sudden my siblings and I were tasked with, okay, how do we take care of mom? 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after dad's funeral, my oldest kid left for college on the other side of the country. I'm in California. She's at school, or, well, right now she's at school at the dining room table, but normally she's at school in Pennsylvania. And it was the 2016 election cycle, which was just, everybody was anxious and fearful and feeling badly. And so I realized as the year went on and I was writing these letters, it was not just doing what I hoped initially, which was letting people know how grateful I was to them, but every time I wrote a letter, I felt so much better. And it became a coping mechanism. It really became something that I looked forward to doing because I knew that after I'd spent a half an hour or however much time writing a letter to someone in my life, I would feel more resilient, more centered, less stressed. And so the project itself ended up taking about a year and a half, because after my dad died, I couldn't do anything for a few months. And anybody who's lost a parent or a close relative like that will understand. But by the time I'd gotten to, let's say, letter 35, I was like, wait a minute, I could write letters to people and not send them, because I know by now that just writing the letter gives me all, it makes me feel great, makes me feel so much happier. So I could write to people like a terrible boss who kind of gave me who laid me off when I was 9 months pregnant. And I could write a letter to a city I've lived in, because that's shaped who I am too. And so it became this really kind of joyous thing where I think, like, what's a negative thing in my life that I've gotten something positive out of? And those are places where I could write letters. Or what are the non-human entities who have made me who I am? And so the book is meant to be a blueprint. I tried to make it pretty nuts and bolts about here's how you can write a letter, because I know for some people, the idea of sitting down writing a letter can be intimidating. So I really did try to give practical tips on how to do that, but also the motivation of why you should do it. And that comes from the science. I really wanted to incorporate the science of why gratitude and happiness are so tightly coupled. So I dove deep into some research there. And then it's entertaining, I hope. I talk a lot about the different kinds of people in your life who you might want to talk to. And each of those groups gets a playlist, because
I love that.
Yeah. Midlife mixtape. I'm going to make you a mixtape. So that's how the book came together. It's not a collection of my 50 letters, because who cares who I wrote to, but I do include some snippets just to get people thinking about how they might want to express their thanks to someone else.
Mm-hmm. I loved the playlist after each one. And that when I would listen to, when you would put the playlist in, songs would like jar my memory, because we're about the same age. So right. The things that ended up, and I really just loved how that connected to the topic you were talking about for that particular chapter. So I recommend that to anybody that's listening to that one.
One of the things I really loved about the book was, one, you did talk about the science behind it. You did the research, and we'll get into that a little bit also. But the gift that you received by writing that letter to your dad right before he passed.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people in our age range and all different age range that have lost a parent. I've lost my dad, but just lost both her parents.
Both mine. Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having written a letter to them that kind of got out everything you wanted to say before is such a gift to yourself. Not even just, yes, it's a gift to them, but what a release to you knowing you said everything you needed to say. So I love that you start the book with that. Can you talk a little bit about how you felt writing that?
Sure. After? Yeah. And that, you know, I tell people that throughout this project, I was surprised over and over again by the benefits that I got from it. And this was absolutely probably the biggest one, was that I sat down early January 2016, wrote my dad a letter. My dad in Rochester, New York, calls me up. He's like, oh, Nance, love the letter. It's great. I framed it. I put it over my desk. And that's mm-hmm. what kind of guy my dad was. Like, he was just a really loving guy. And I, 6 months later, I'm sitting at his desk looking at the framed letter because I'm writing dad's eulogy. And I had gone home 6 weeks between diagnosis and his funeral. I was able to be home for 4 of those weeks, and while he was in hospice. And I never worried I worried about so many things during that time. I was so sad during that time. But the one thing I didn't have to worry about was that my dad didn't know how I felt about him. And so I was really grateful that I had taken the time well before any of us knew he was sick to say, these are the things you used to... My dad was the only guy who could comb my hair. And now we're on a Zoom call. These ladies are actually seeing my pandemic hair. It's so frizzy. And my dad was really patient. He would put me down in front of Gilligan's Island and just comb my hair really gently for like the full half hour. That's how long it took. And when my first job out of college, I moved to Germany because I was 22 and I knew everything. And I was like, I'm just going to move to a foreign country. I'm fine. And my dad showed up about a month in and was like, let me help you do this. Let me help you do this. Let me validate your feeling about this. And I didn't realize how much I needed it until he was there, but he did. And I'm sure my mom did. I'm pretty sure my mom bought that plane ticket and made him go. So it was just these little, it just makes me think about it, these little moments that we have with people in our lives that end up being so much bigger. And maybe it takes you 40 years or 50 years to look back and realize that that little piece of advice they gave you or the thing they did to help you that you didn't even really think about at the time was something that would change the course of your life. And so, yeah, I was really glad I'd had the time to express it to my dad. In my mom's case, that was 4 years ago. Her dementia's gotten worse. I don't know how much of the letter I wrote to my mom she was able to absorb, but I know it's more than she would be able to now. So I'm glad I wrote it when I did.
And they were your first two letters.
Those were the first two letters.
Two that you wrote. And then I also love how you hit different things. You said writing to a city, writing to a place, and you were talking about the camp.
Family camp.
Yes. And your dad's role in that as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. In the year of our Lord, 1968, my parents threw the three kids into the woody paneled station wagon in Rochester, New York, and we went up to the Adirondack Mountains to this family camp, and we have never missed a year since. And it used to be there were five Davises in this camp, and now there's like 27 of us.
Oh my goodness.
It's like Calcutta. It's very crowded. And we go with the same group of families, it's like 35 families. There's always some new folks in, which is great. But it's a private camp. It's a Y camp. And this is just 1 week of the year they convert it to a family camp. And it's very hokey. We do square dancing and GIMP and painting or whatever. But it's so much a part of the fabric of my family. And we all bring our kids. And my eldest daughter worked there as a camp counselor for years. And so it's just like part of who we are. And my dad was a huge volunteer and fundraiser for the camp. So they have a send a kid to camp fund that my dad was really involved in. And he was the camp historian. So that nobody appointed him to that. He appointed himself to that job. Mm-hmm. And so every year during family camp, there was a night where you could come listen to Larry Davis tell you all about camp history. And of course, the three Davis children were like, oh God, again. But he was a treasure for that place because he just shared his love of the camp. And in fact, I'm looking at a picture across my office of Dad giving his history speech because that is peak Dad. Like he was so happy to have that knowledge and to be able to share it. So I will be honest, I'm a little concerned that in 2020 that I'm not sure there's going to be family camp given all the pandemic.
Everything going on.
But it won't matter because everybody in that, there was a Zoom call yesterday with family camp people just to, on Easter Sunday to put on our Easter bonnets and say hello to each other.
Oh,
it's
goodness.
Just, you know, really deep bonds and a place that is just so special to all of us.
That chapter where you talked about places and just something like that, it makes me think about how things that aren't people take on a persona. And that's like the home I grew up in. To me, it seems like a person. And we sold it. My mother passed away in 2013, and I'm from a family of 12 children. I'm number 11. And we'd had the home since 1960. Mm-hmm. And sold it. And I really wanted to buy it, but I knew we were moving at the time and I knew things were up in the air. And so that thing is like a person to me. So when I do my letters, I will probably write one to the house that I grew up in, you know?
I think it's beautiful. And I think if you think about the person you are and how these forces shape us, and I mean, I would guess that you're someone who really prioritizes having a warm home and having a place that's welcoming And that maybe comes from the environment you grew up in. And so that's the kind of thing you can trace back to, not just the people in your life, but the places where you've spent mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. or the hobbies you have. One of the letters that I include in the book is to the live music industry, because mm-hmm. I love going to concerts. You guys live in the most amazing concert city.
Yeah.
The CMAs were canceled this year. So.
I know.
You know what I'm jealous about? I interviewed Ann Powers, who's also in Nashville, an amazing music writer for NPR. And she was telling me how in Nashville, your concerts start early, don't they? They're like...
They do.
Yes.
They do. That's
very grateful
here in
for
Oakland.
That.
I can't tell you how many times I've gotten to the purchase button on a tickets for somebody that I love and I can't wait to go see them. And then I see doors at 9 and I'm like, sorry, I'm out. I am right. too old for that. Yeah. Mama does not stay up past 11:30 for a show anymore. I can't.
Yeah. Well, that's late for 11:30 is impressive.
Oh, Colleen shuts down at 10.
I'm at 10.
Yeah, she's 10 o'clock.
I'm 10 o'clock. Yeah. I do on a normal night, but
one night a month I can stay up late, but I am not, if the opening act isn't coming on until 10:30, I am not interested. No, I will watch a YouTube video.
Exactly. And have a much better seat because you have the screen right there. Can you talk a little bit about the three sections, the see, the say, and the savor in your book, and why it's important for people to understand why you decided to do this gratitude book?
Sure. So I just wanted to break it down into something that would be easy for people to remember in terms of how this works to express your deliberate gratitude. So the C part is just taking the time to think of a person. Let's just say it's a person. Let's say it's one of your friends. Just spend time in your head thinking about all the different ways that they have helped you or shaped you. And I say this throughout the book. I really, obviously, as someone who wrote these 50 letters, I think it's good to write the letters. But the science shows that even just thinking about the positive things that people have done for you already does the heavy lifting of rewiring your brain to look more easily for things to be grateful for. So it's this concept of positive recall bias. And a lot of us, especially now, have negative recall bias that's hard to get out of. And that is just this tendency to look for the negative things around us first and to hold on to those because, oh my God, I just woke up and looked at the news and everything's horrible and now I'm going to have a horrible day. And what researchers have found is that the most effective way to quiet that voice is by looking for something positive instead, which is pretty logical. So what it means is just taking a beat and saying, okay, before I spin off completely on the bad news, let me think for a second about what is good. Oh, I have a roof over my head right now. I was able to have breakfast this morning. I'm wearing a sweater that I love, whatever. And that starts to rewire your brain. What the scientists say is the neurons that fire together wire together. And so every time you are stopping yourself from going down that negative recall route, a negative bias route, and instead thinking about something positive or helpful instead, you're making it easier for your brain to do that next time. So the C part really is just about pulling your anecdotes together or your thoughts together for what you would want to say to somebody to express your thanks for them. The say part, the second part of it, is writing the letter. Again, I think there's something really powerful about giving someone a physical artifact of a letter that they can reread, that puts down in writing for them what they mean to you. And I think we express ourselves differently in writing than we do when we're just talking extemporaneously. But if writing the letters sounds overwhelming, don't bother with it. I really tried to make this book the mm-hmm. opposite of the you must write your thank you letters book. I don't want anyone to feel like they're being nagged. This is really an invitation to think about these people in your life, if it feels right for you to document that and to share it with them, because it's a double whammy. You're making yourself feel better. You're really making them feel better. So, and again, I just try to give some tips about how to write those letters. And I interviewed other people who had done similar projects because I wanted to get other people's experiences as well, so the reader knows that there's a wide array of how you can approach this. And then the third part, I do get naggy, the savor part. And that is, if you write the letters, you must keep a copy of every letter you write. And that's because you'll go back and reread those and you won't believe how long those letters can make you feel good after the fact. And again, this is one of the areas where I was completely surprised. So I love when people handwrite these letters. I was unable to do that because my handwriting is terrible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure people could read my signature on some of the letters that are illegible. But I'm a writer, so I use Word all the time. So I just I did once a week. I usually did Friday afternoons, open up a new page in the same Word document, start typing, and I'd write my one page letter. And at the end, I printed them all out. I just had a 50 page document, took it to a little janky copy shop. And that little bound book from the copy shop is on my nightstand. 4 years later, it is still powerful. I still open that book and just read a letter or two. And I think, oh boy, am I lucky that my friend Kathy was my college roommate. She really got me out of so many binds, and I still love to see her. And it has a real staying power. So that's the saver part. And that is, I think you ladies can attest, the one place where I am rather a nag. Just keep a copy of your letters and you'll be glad you did.
Wow. And I love too how you said you don't nag. I love the forgiveness that you suggest to give yourself if you don't stay on your little schedule that you may have set up for yourself, because things happen like they happen to you. Yeah.
There are no thank you note police. No one is looking over your shoulder, and nobody knows you're writing these letters. So if you meant to send somebody a letter in March 2020 and things went sideways, you could still send that letter in December 2020, and the person will still be happy to get that letter then.
Right.
So there's no point in beating yourself up, because I think the world does that enough for us.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to give yourself some grace, some forgiveness. Yeah. And then I also really, I loved when you talked about writing to your exes. And that
everybody loves that part.
I love that. It was, but your story was so neat too. Your story around that was so neat because you were in Germany at the time of the Berlin Wall being torn down. But yeah, I love too how you forgive, like you don't have to send all of these letters. And I thought, ooh, that's good. And it's not, you shouldn't expect something back. You might get something back, but don't write those letters with the intent of they better write me back or something like that.
Right. That was one of my rules going in, is nobody asked me to write them a thank you letter. So it is unfair for me to say, well, I gave you a thank you letter, you better send me one back. You know, that was not the spirit of what I was doing. So I really kept my expectations very, very low. That said, virtually every person who received a letter responded in some way. And in some cases, it was big, like my dad framing it. In other cases, it was just a text where somebody said, I got your letter, thank you so much. And that was, you know, people have different levels of comfort with how they respond to that. But this is something else that has come up back in the olden days when I could do in-person readings. People wonder if they're going to feel uncomfortable. Someone's going to get a letter and say, you know, I changed your life. I don't even know who you are. And that just didn't happen. And then when I interviewed other people who had done similar projects, everyone said the same thing. No, like, that didn't happen to me. Everyone who gets one of these letters really feels moved, and they may express their gratitude for it back to you differently, but nobody is mad to be told that they're a positive influence on somebody else's life. Like, you can let that go. Wow. But I did, as those neural pathways got stronger and stronger, I did start thinking about, okay, who are people that I'm not in touch with who have had a positive impact on my life? And one of them was when I moved to Germany, I had a German boyfriend who was super helpful about just really dumb stuff. Like, how do I pay my bills? Well, you go to the post office, obviously. And I'm like, that's not obvious to an American. I didn't know that. And he's just really patient with me and explained that kind of stuff. So I wrote him a thank you letter, didn't mail it. But of course, when you write a letter about writing thank you notes and you include snippets of people's letter, I have to then tell him that I'd written. And don't write a letter about writing thank you letters, or don't write a book about writing thank you letters if you really don't want to have to notify people.
Yeah.
You haven't read this letter, but anybody who buys
it's going to be in this book.
Surprise.
Like, what? Oh, that's funny.
I also thought it was interesting how you made the point that by thanking people, you're making yourself vulnerable to saying, I needed you, or I need you, or there. That's an interesting concept, because you don't think about your own vulnerability by writing a thank you note.
Right. I mean, we live in a country where national holiday is Independence Day. We say we pull ourselves up by our bootstrap. I mean, the lone cowboy on the Western Plains is one of our iconic heroes. And so I think it can be very hard for Americans as a culture, and male Americans in particular, to have to look back and say, well, here's a place where I was about to go deep, you know, way off the rails, and here's the person who helped me. And I just kind of, I wanted to acknowledge in the book that it can feel a little uncomfortable. And, you know, one of the scientists I interviewed, Christine Carter with the Greater Good Science Center, I asked her, is there anybody, is there a type of person for whom gratitude letters don't work the way I'm talking about them working, you know, creating more happiness and resilience and calm. And she said, it's not that gratitude letters don't work on this group of people, but there are people who have just cut themselves off of all emotions because they are uncomfortable with how the negative emotion feels. So think of somebody who is feeling sad or isolated or grieving, and instead of feeling it, they pick up Candy Crush and they play that, or they turn on Netflix and start binging it. They just kind of like crowd out that uncomfortable negative feeling. And the problem is you can't selectively numb your emotions. But an interesting part of my conversation with her, she said, it is important for you to make the point to people that they let themselves feel vulnerable. They're not going to be stuck in that negative feeling. You're not just acknowledging that you made a big screw up when you were in college and, you know, your college roommate helped you through it. Doesn't mean you're always going to be that screw up. Doesn't mean you're always going to feel that sense of shame or whatever it is that you associate with that situation. You found the right person to help you through it. And that's one of the things that I, yet another crazy takeaway that Nancy didn't expect. I looked back at the end of 50 letters. I was able to look back and say, I'll tell you what I was good at, finding help. Like that I knew how to do. I made a lot of mistakes and I'll continue to make a lot of mistakes. But at least I have the wherewithal to find somebody to go to who can have my back in that situation. And it's why the last letter I suggest writing is to yourself. If you've had the smarts to pull together this team of people, you're doing something right.
Right. And you gave yourself a playlist too. I like that. I love
Actually, I have to say so the playlists are all available on Spotify too. I don't know if you know that I got them all set up on Spotify so people don't have to do the hard work. If you look up Davis Co. on Spotify, they're there.
Okay.
But that I think the one to myself, that was probably my favorite playlist just from a purely musical standpoint, because there's some great songs like Joan Armatrading and there's Bombo Estero, which is a really great Spanish group. And yeah, I had fun putting that one together.
Oh, that was really, I loved all of that part of it.
Not that we want to get stuck in the whole COVID era, because we don't. But if you had to write a thank you note to this period of time, what would you be grateful for?
It is such a great and timely question. So yesterday was Easter Sunday, and I live in Oakland, California. So we are blessed, first of all, with nice weather. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get out and take a long walk yesterday through so I'm a big hiker, and usually I hike up on the trails in the Oakland Hills, and I can't do that right now because there's too many people on them, and I don't want it. We can't keep 6-foot distance on those trails. So I've started walking on surface streets near my house that I don't usually walk on. And I was thinking, I would never be on these streets looking at these people have amazing yards and gardens. And I look over people's fences and I'm like, oh, we could do that in our front yard. Oh, I wonder what that plant is. And I was thinking as I walked, I am really grateful to the pandemic. If I have to find silver linings in this horrible time, the fact that I'm out checking out the landscaping on Sunny Hills is not a bad outcome. And then I came home and my two college girls are here, and I wish more than anything else that they were finishing up their school years as they thought they would last fall. I have a second semester college senior, so it's particularly hard on her. But they wouldn't be home for Easter dinner if this weren't happening. Really nice family dinner, which I'm going to be honest, like we're not operating on all cylinders all the time here. Don't get the wrong impression. But last night we had a really nice family dinner, and my mom is still healthy. She's 86. She's living with my sister temporarily. They're both healthy. Like it just, this whole thing, I think, is, I did not plan to write a book for a pandemic, believe you me.
Right.
But the idea of stopping and thinking to yourself right now, what is something I can be thankful for? I'm more aware, having written these thank you letters, I know that works. And having talked to the scientists, I know it works. It's not just my theory. And so this is a time where we're really called, I think, to stop and just be grateful for small things. And my hope going forward is that we carry that with us in some way societally that makes things work better for more people.
Great, great answer. Mm-hmm. Well, we are going to have the link to the book and your
podcast. Website.
I had to think that for a moment. Your podcast and all the information on the show notes. So we'll make sure to have all of that on there. We want to thank you, Nancy, for coming
on. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
It's so nice talking with you both. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
And your book motivated me because I'm not really good at writing a journal. I'm not good at that.
Same. And I'm not either.
I think it was all those brothers and sisters sneaking. If you tried to attempt a diary, they would find it. And I was like, I'm not even doing it. I've seen that movie.
So you're before. Grateful for physical distance, right? That's what you're saying. You're grateful for the social distance.
They can't
grateful
come
for those.
Here.
Remember those diaries with the tiny little locks?
Yes.
Oh, they break that thing. Just break.
Dignity.
So. Well, thank you so much, and please stay safe and healthy. Yeah. And
you guys too. Stay well.
We'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview and you learned a little bit about gratitude and maybe even have some thoughts on who you would send a letter to or even just text.
Yes.
I appreciate you. I'm grateful for our relationship.
Any form of writing, yes.
Exactly. She was very specific that it does not have to be letter form.
Mm-hmm.
I think just being great, showing gratitude comes in so many different forms, even just sending a flower or something, leaving a coffee on someone's doorstep.
Is that a hint?
No, do not send me coffee. I can't drink coffee.
That's right. You can't drink coffee.
But tea will be welcome. And then I'd have to, disinfect it and everything. So
don't bother.
Okay. Virtual drinks. And all of her information will be on the show notes for this episode. So please check that out and make sure to subscribe and listen to our podcast as well, because we have really cool people like Nancy on. So you want to see. And we have our own conversations about life in midlife. So
yes.
You never know what Bridget and I are going to come up with.
That's right.
So I guess we will all talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.